I'd just like to welcome all of you to this continuing lecture series that we have during Club Hour, which is sponsored both by the Morning Jewish Studies Program with Rabbi Reese's leadership, and also with the college, in conjunction with the college, under my direction, being coordinated by my presidential fellow, Uri Westreich. And this is the second of a series of ongoing lectures that we're going to have, in which we are trying to explore a very important aspect of education at Yeshiva College and in the morning programs, in which we can bring to light the importances and the issues that are generated in both studying an institution that incorporates both Limudei Kodesh and Limudei Chol under one secular and religious studies under one roof, and in dealing with those issues that arise from such a juxtapositioning of intellectual thinking, to try to raise those issues and have serious discussions about them. This is just one of many lectures that have been planned for the rest of the spring season, and this is something that Rabbi Reese and I are committed to, and that is a more holistic appreciation of the undergraduate education that students have in this institution. And the hour is a bit late, but more on that, I'm sure, as we continue to move into the series. It's an exciting program in the sense that I have the distinct pleasure to know both panelists, and for the panelists to know each other with a very special relationship of that of a Rav to a Talmid to a Rav. There is a strong tradition here, which is the beauty of Yeshiva University and Yeshiva College education, in that we have this tradition of learning not only from the textbook itself, but really from people who model the Torah Umada goal, which we seek to accomplish this integration. And I think that the integration is made most palpable and is proven only by the human models which develop from such exposure. And we have two wonderful models with us today. And I've asked Carl to please have the, if he would mind, having the privilege of introducing his Rav and to begin the program.
Okay, so very quickly, Rabbi Tandler needs no introduction, and I know he's always asked me never to give elaborate introductions. However, Uri was nice enough to put my picture up on the poster that went out for today, and I feel like I have to earn my board and keep somehow or other. So it's my great privilege to talk to you just very briefly. For the last 60 years, our speaker today, Rav Tandler, has been the indefatigable leader of our yeshiva, Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzhak Alchanan, our college, Yeshiva College, and our university, Yeshiva University. During that 60 years, without interruption, he has continually given his regular Gemara Shiur, untold numbers of specialized Shiurim in Yoredeya, Hilchos Nida, Mikvaos, other aspects of Shulchan Aruch, etc., etc., etc. At the same time, he has run a research laboratory in the biology department. He has taught continuously in the biology department every year, mostly teaching microbiology, bioethics in recent times, many other courses over the years. But most importantly, he has served as our guiding light and our inspiration in the biology department. His ability to keep up with the contemporary literature awes the rest of us and puts us to shame because we can't get to the journals and read them as fast as he does. We still have not figured out how that happens. At the same time that he has done this, he manages to be a globetrotter around the world, where he is frequently sought after to speak at conferences and conventions, both specialized in the area of medical halacha and in general bioethics as well. Two fields, both fields, in which he is known as the pioneer of those fields. Also, shuls, yeshivas, etc., around the world, when testimony is necessary to be given on issues of medical ethics and modern science, both to Congress here in the United States and in Israel, again, his expertise is sought. I think that every form of news media, radio, television, newspapers, internet, have Dr. Tendler's number on speed dial, because he's always the first one that gets called to express his opinion on issues that come up. Most importantly of all, he is totally available to hundreds and thousands of rabbanim and laity who call him on a daily basis to ask him the most complicated issues of medical halacha, seeking his wisdom and his psak. His name is synonymous with Torah Umada, with Yeshiva College, with Yeshiva University, and with Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzhak Elchanan. So therefore, it is most fitting and appropriate that today he will address us on issues of science in the service of halacha, Yelamdeinu Mareinu Harav Tendler.
It's not often that someone has the opportunity to hear his own eulogy. This is part one of a joint lecture . The important part I'm leaving for Dr. Veit. He will, among other things, discuss the most significant issue on the interface of science and halacha and our faith. It's a topic of total view of evolution. I figure I'll leave him the easy stuff. Let me begin with a reference to tomorrow, to Shabbos, the Torah reading. Read that Yisro, father-in-law of Moshe, comes to convert to Judaism. Rashi, that begins the Sefer, doesn't mention that, but he's quoting a piece of the Gemara in Zvachim and Avkuf Tezayin, Mashmua Shama Ubal Lehizgayer. What would make a man who sat on the top of the world, a recognized leader of his idolatrous religion, what would make him change to a monotheistic faith? And the Talmud gives three answers to that question. The first, he heard how Amalek attacked the Jewish people. People defenseless, without food or water, walking in the desert, and Amalek decided to attack them. Pure evil for evil's sake. That disturbed him. Kind of stop the world, I want to get off. This is not my world. Second comment, he heard that there was a giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. You want to get off the world, but which world will you join? Is there anything better around? So he heard, yes, there's something better coming up. There's a code of ethics and morals that's being presented to people. And then the last comment is, and he heard about the splitting of the Sea of Reeds, or the Reed Sea. Splitting of the Reed Sea said something very significant. He said that the God who gave the Torah is the God of nature. No two gods. He grew up with a whole bunch of gods. God of thunder, God of lightning, God of sea, God of air. And suddenly, the God who took them out of Egypt, the God who's giving them a code of law, is also the God who controls nature. That unity concept was the final reason that Yisro decided to join the Jewish people. My topic for today is that last comment, namely the unity of our intellectual experience here at Yeshiva. Without sounding like a bit of a salesman for Yeshiva, which of course I am, that's why we're here. That's our raison d'être, to present you with a unity of Torah and world and society. I don't know if you people can read it, so I'll say it quickly. Torah demands you use your head. Torah and science have shared fundamental concepts. One, causality. There is no chaos in the world. Everything has a cause. And two, that cause can be understood by the human mind. I can say, yes, there are rules and regulations, but it's above my ability to understand them. Then for all intents and purposes, there are no rules and regulations. And third, causality is not just in big ideas, in big events, epochs, but details. Every detail has a cause. Science shares that same conviction. Here, we do need a big screen for that. But I want to read to you, this is from the Nitziv. Many of the chief boys here study it regularly when you study the Bible, study the Chumash. Story of the building of the tabernacle in the desert required there to be a candelabra there. Candelabra had seven arms to the candelabra. What are the seven? Had to say something. So the Hamek Dovo in Nitziv. Can they read it all from there?
Yeah?
I have it underlined. Mishum she'b'Torah she'b'alpeh nichlal sheva chochmos. Because our Torah includes the seven wisdoms, the old Greek definition, or rather identification of all knowledge in the form of seven curricula. Shebeli yidia b'chol ha'chochmos eyefsha lovo l'chachmas ikriya Torah. Now, in many yeshivas, that's known as heresy. Without knowing the other wisdoms, you can't know our Torah. That's a fundamental belief of our religion. The fact that it's being neglected in other places of Torah study, it's because their Torah study isn't adequate, not because their science isn't adequate, as I will show you. Likewise, I showed you several references here too. It says, Shisha Kane Menorah, the six arms of the candelabra, Hem Sheva Chochmos Titzonios, they are the six other wisdoms, Hatfeilim LeTorah, that are now subject to Torah input. And the scheme that we believe in is all of wisdom pertains to me. Without that wisdom, I can't understand what God wants of me. But my Torah, my rules of ethics and morals, they are necessary to make the other wisdoms fit for human society. There's a law that our Torah has to be written a certain way. It must be written in Hebrew, special lettering. But it also can be written in Greek. When Noah blessed his son Japhet, he said, Yavta lekim liyefes v'yishkon b'or leishem. God should be good to Yefes. He should dwell in the tents of Shem. Shem is the progenitor of our religion, of the Jewish people. Sheyu Dvorov shel Shem ne'morim b'lashono shel Yefes. The concepts, the ideas that God gave us in the Torah has to be able to be said in every other language as well, especially in the Greek language, which was supposedly then a language that can capture the innuendos, the connotations of words better than any other language other than Hebrew. Point. We are a religion in which the God of Torah and the God of nature speaks to us, but in a very special way. I don't know if I made a slide of this one. I'll say this. The Rambam emphasizes there's a mitzvah, a requirement that you love God. And my mom is asked, what do you mean you love God? How do you love God? Yet it's a requirement. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs. And he says, you know how you love God? Through Yiras Hashem, through being in awe of God. How are you in awe of God? You look at God in nature, study how he made his animals, how he controls his world. That'll convince you he's worthy of your love. You can't perform the mitzvah of Avas Hashem without Yiras Hashem, without being in awe of God. You cannot be in awe of God without knowing God in nature. Rav says, that you should be careful on the Sabbath, if the button is loose, not to pull the thread to tighten it, because that's an act of sewing. It's a constructive act on the Shabbos. Shouldn't do that. Second, you shouldn't study with a magician. And third, if you don't study astronomy, you're not fit to talk to. Also, l'saperimo. What is Rav saying? And then the end of that Gemara on Daf Ayin Hey in Shabbos, Omar Rav Yochanan, mitzvah lachshov tkufos umazolos. It's a mitzvah to study astronomy. You can't not study because God commanded it. Astronomy was about the only science of the time. There was nothing else to study. And what is he saying? The idea of tying those three things together, pulling a thread, studying with a magician, and studying astronomy. A special concept. And Rav was the scientist among the Talmudists. Gemara records that he went out for 18 months with the shepherds to study veterinary science so he could rule on the halachic issues that come from them. Gabi Mumi B'chol. What he says is very simply. Taking disparate things and putting them together is an act of accomplishment. Meleches Machsheves. A magician takes a unity of God and breaks it apart into different powers. And when you study science, you bring it back together again. And you see God in nature, then you reunify God in nature. You reunify God with man. This is a central theme, sadly, that the study of nature has become one of the forbidden studies in most yeshivas. I'm a rov in a community in Muncie where the local yeshivas boast how little time they spend in secular studies. Send your kids to my school. We only give an hour and a half a week. No one knows how that developed. But that's the current that we're fighting today. We're trying fighting against that current. I wonder, something I hope it doesn't get published, I wonder how many of Yeshiva University graduates, how many of their children are not going to college because of the move to the right, that is, the current radicalization of Judaism. Here you have get out there. Next one. Okay. Not where we have to go to something else. Yeah. This will be before that. No. Let's see where the, I know where we're up to down that one, unless it was omitted when we put this up. Take all this. This is good enough. In Parsha Shmini, the Torah lists the forbidden animals, what we shouldn't eat, what we should eat. And then the end of the Parsha, after spending most of the text outlining and identifying kosher animals, kosher birds, which fish are kosher, etc. Then the last verse is, right, Lahavdil ben atomei ben ator ben achaya necheles achaya shalot teyochel. Why would that verse be there? It's totally redundant. That's what you were telling me all along. So Rashi comments, what I'm saying to you is, not only you should know what's a cow and what's a donkey. I want you to be able to differentiate when the ritual slaughterer slaughters an animal and he cuts through only 50% of the windpipe, the food pipe, the trachea, esophagus, then the animal is not kosher. It must be more than half. You have to know to differentiate, right? Chai and achel is what? But when it is this one here. Sorry. Okay. Ben Nishrat, this one here I'm referring to. Ben Nishrat Chetzu Shokonde, Nishrat Rubu Shokonde. Now, what does that mean? Shochet comes to the rabbi and says, I slaughtered this chicken. I didn't go all the way through. I don't know whether I did it 50% or 50.1%. What the rabbi thinks, got to get rid of this guy. What does he want from me? How am I supposed to tell him? The answer is, you better learn how to tell him. How will you find? You know how to use a micrometer? You know how to use a laser beam? Some way you're going to have to figure it out, because that's a mitzvah in the Torah. I am not want you to differentiate between a donkey and a cow. I want you to be able to understand how you apply in life. I can't give you a rule, you must stretch 50.1% and not be able to identify whether it's 50 or not. Something. Okay. It's a story that many of you, most of you must have read, how Shlomo HaMelech trapped the devil, Ashmedai, in order to get from him a snail that could cut into stone. Because on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, or the high priest, he had jewels which had the names of the tribes on there. And you couldn't use any metal to inscribe those names. You had to use, maybe if they had a laser beam would be permissible, but you couldn't use metal. He said, well, no problem. This Ashmedai had a little snail that was able to etch out in stone. And that's the kind of stories I want to focus on now. It has to do with what we call Emunas Chazal. Our sages tell us stories. They tell us laws, no problem. Start telling us stories or talk medical language. Did they know what they were talking about? But how can you ask such a question? There are sages. Answer is, as much as possible, I'd like to confirm what they said. And we'll see if we can't confirm that this is what they said. When they speak ex cathedra, not so terrible if you don't believe what they said. Here you have a case, a classic case of people thinking they didn't have any basis what they said, and I don't know if I have found a basis. But I was in the Negev, and I'm in the Negev. By day, you see nothing. At night, the place is filled with snails. These snails live on one food supply, lichens that grow on the rocks. In order to get to the lichens, they etch out in the rocks 2 millimeters deep, which is the depth that a jeweler uses for engraving things. Is this the shamir of the Beis HaMikdash that they had to use in order to write the names? I don't know. But suddenly, it's not a story. It's not a fantasy. It's God in nature speaking to us. If that's the reason, that's what you have to use, perfectly fine. I know how to do that. I take some lichen juice and write the names and put my snail down and it'll etch it out for me. God said that when we go to conquer Israel, he'll help us out. He will send a tzirah, he'll send a wasp that will spit venom at the people. Anybody who studies a little biology knows wasps don't spit venom. They have a hypodermic needle, right? They sting you and they inject venom. You ever hear of a spitting insect?
Here's a fellow studying in the rainforest, studying an entomologist, studying insects in the rainforest. And he's up on a tree. And read what it says. If you could read it. He had a beekeeper's mask on. Undeterred, the angry wasps charged his face, scooched their hind ends underneath their bodies in midair, and from a range of 4 inches squirted venom through the veil straight into his eyes. You ever hear of a spitting insect? You ask this poor fellow, he'll tell you it sure is there. But it doesn't prove anything. Don't sell our people short. There is some imagery which is pure imagery. Some injury based upon fact. But we have problems. I say my focus is Emunas Chazal. I teach you in biology things that our sages disagree with. I teach you in biology that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. Mice don't come from mud. My grandmother thought it came from leaving dirty underwear in the closet. But our Talmud says it comes from mud. Mishneh in Chulin questions a mouse that's half flesh and half mud. Obviously in the process of coming out. What is its rules concerning ritual? Some problem? If you touch a dead mouse, you
are defiled. You can't go into the temple till you go to a ritual bath. What is the status? He touched the earth part of this mouth. So Maimonides, the Rambam on the bottom says, you know, he says, such a mouse, he says, I don't understand. Mixoso boso, mixoso tit. Right? Whom is Noah Kulu? And it all shows signs of life. Husipa mefusa meyo. That's a famous story. Ein mispo l'rabe mishal omru l'ishroz. Many people told me they saw it. But mitzius balchai kazeh, such a live thing. Dova mafli. It's too wondrous. Ein ladaslo hezbeklal. I don't have any understanding of that. He wants to back off from it. The truth is, you don't have to back off from it. Look at Galen's bestiary. He has a picture of a mouse that's coming out of the earth. That's what taught. That's what the Greeks taught us. And our sages had great respect for Greek science. If that's so, you give me the case, I'll give you the ritual conclusions of the case. Whether it's relevant or not, the principles are relevant. And if I respond to the principles, they don't have to affirm the spontaneous generation. There is no spontaneous generation until this year when synthetic biology came in and they want to tell us that there is spontaneous generation. I can go to my chemicals on the shelf and make myself a bacterium that'll then reproduce. That sure sounds like spontaneous generation. I'm saying the Talmud class in Nido this year. Look at this. How could anyone dare consider himself someone who can decide, be a decisor on ritual items? Listen what here Rabbi Zeiro said. I cannot rule on the menstrual laws because I don't understand the new science of Babel, the science of Persia. So the Talmud asks, the Talmud asks, if you don't know the science of the Babylonians, what's it got to do with our Talmud? You can rule on the Talmud. And he answers, B'tivolo yodana, I'm not acquainted with natural science. How can I possibly be acquainted with the laws of the Torah? I haven't seen that included in too many shiurim that other Rosh Yeshiva give. Here's this one. This is Rav Shri Roigo. This is special for you. This is Rav Shri Roigo. Right? The Gaonim, highest authority in our law. Right? The Talmud gives certain medical advice. Medical advice. Is it there? Anyway, medical advice concerning curing of some headaches or something. And he's asked, should we follow the advice that's recorded in the Talmud? And the answer he gives in Hebrew, this is an Aramaic. Let me read it to you first. The language in Aramaic is Rabbonon lav asusi inun. The rabbis are not our doctors. Umilu ba'alma de chazinu bizmaneihun. They're recording the knowledge of their time. And therefore, I tell you, lo sisbuchun alun, don't trust them. If you're sick, go to rofim bikim, go to good doctors. Don't go to my rabbis. That applies to many areas of science where they record the science of the time. But it's not universally accepted. To this day, there are great rabbinic scholars who insist you take the text literally and you do what the Talmud says and not what the doctors tell you. Here, I'll give you just one case.
They had that one up there already? Was that there before? Yeah. Okay. Some of you may know, it's a famous Tzitz Eliezer. He was the main posek for Shaar HaTzedek Hospital for many years. Okay. He opposed the use of blood tests to ascertain paternity. Why? Because the Talmud says that the mother contributes the blood to the fetus, the father contributes the muscles and bones, and therefore paternity tests can only be determined for a daughter, but not for a son. A daughter, I can tell you whether a daughter was fathered by this man, fathered by this woman, but I can't tell you anything about the maternity, I can tell you. But I can't say anything about paternity because the father doesn't contribute the blood. Now, we're talking about the year 1998. Perfectly content to rule on that basis. Now, on that basis, he also ruled that a child that's born, a fetus that's born at 6.5 months, is not viable, and therefore you can abort such a child. Despite the fact that everybody knows already that at 24 weeks, we haven't been doing too badly in bringing such a child into full maturity and then have relatively trouble-free adulthood for such a child. What does that mean? It means what Rav Zeira said. If you don't know the science of Bavel, you can't rule on halachic issues. My father-in-law, Zatzal, recognizes a posek that most people listen to. Had to rule on an issue of brainstem death. He never went to college. He didn't know the science of Bavel. It took him 2 years, during which time I brought in practically every head of department of Albert Einstein to meet with him. I remember the head of nephrology slept over in his house one night because he wasn't finished with discussion with him. It took him 2 years to try to differentiate between irreversible coma and brain death. To this day, most doctors can't make your distinction. Finally, he convinced himself that brain death is death, irreversible coma is fully alive, and therefore brain dead patients can be removed from the ventilator. These long-term coma patients cannot. He had to go to college first. He did college the hard way, right, by having a whole bunch of professors come in and try to teach him what he had to know, but he wouldn't rule on the case until he knew. One issue that concerns the boys. Dissections in the lab. How dare you cut up a live frog? It's cruel, it's wasteful. A good, fine Jewish boy shouldn't do such things. Here again, our department runs according to halacha. Not true. That's a misuse of your emotion. We have now half the Hollywood actors and actresses belong to PETA. They go around killing scientists, so they shouldn't kill frogs. What is the halacha? I just cited for the boys want to know. The nice source is the Nodi Behuda, who was asked by a student of his who became wealthy, can he go hunting? So fine Talmud, it was himself a great Talmud Chacham. Now he came into money, he wants to go hunting. And he answers, for times, allow me just to say it to you without reading it for you. For he says very simply, he says, why do you want to go hunting? He says, you could kill animals for nothing. He says, no, it's not for nothing. God gave us control over animals. If there's any virtue, you want to give the meat to your dogs after that, no objection to it.
You want to make shoes from the leather? No objection to it. Right. He says, I don't have one little problem, he says. Number one, he says, that in the Torah we find there were two hunters, right? Esav and Nimrod. None of them were held in high esteem. Do you want to join their company? Right. Number two, he says, it's a dangerous business. People get shot when they go hunting. Animals attack them. He says, what right do you have to expose yourself to dangers for no reason? He says, you're a hunter who's going to make a living from hunting. All my blessing goes with you. You're going to cut open a frog because that's going to give you a better understanding of the anatomy of the frog, of the physiology of the frog. That's what God made frogs for. He didn't make frogs for frogs. He made frogs for you. That's the halachic view. If there's virtue in what you're doing, there's a reason for doing it, then we are the masters of the world. God gave over that mastery to us. Therefore, we do it. And some people ask, I'm a Kohen, and there's skeletons in the closet. We have no skeletons in the closet. Yeah, all the skeletons came out after Madoff. We have plastic skeletons. What happened now? That doesn't move at all. Okay. Again, just what I'm showing you now, but today really, are from my files. As I read stuff, I put it away because this holds my interest. The interface of science and halacha. The wife of Rav Nachman, Yalto, the wife of Rav Nachman, said, whatever God said was forbidden, he didn't want to take away pleasure from the Jewish nation. He gave you the similar thing that's kosher. He said you shouldn't eat blood. But you can eat liver. It tastes the same thing. Because you want to eat ham, pork, he says, can't eat ham, pork, but as a fish, it tastes just the same way. It's called shibuta. All right? You can go on the market. Right? This fish, the tambuki, is available, sold in kosher restaurants as well. It's expensive. What's the big yichus of this fish? It tastes exactly like pork. I don't know why that should be worthwhile to spend extra money for it. But it's a perfectly kosher fish with scales that tastes like pork. When it was taught in class, the boys smirk. Baloney. It's not baloney. Some stuff is the knowledge of the time which was deficient. And some stuff is the truth. It's important to reaffirm our faith by finding a few of those that are really true. Here you have... Okay. I'm only citing this because Dr. Burns, Eddie Burns, who is now one of the deans at Albert Einstein, is submitted this to JAMA there. But I've been doing this for 10 years, 20 years before this appeared. But a rabbi should know a fellow has a heart condition, and we ask him to salt the meat before he eats. Otherwise, it's not kosher. So either he has to eat, has to get, not so easy to get, unsalted meat from the butcher, who usually salts it as when it comes in, and broil it, or else he can't eat the meat. Salt content is too high. So anyone who ever been in a lab and dialyzed something knows no big deal. My father needed also low sodium diet. So for years, we put a piece of meat from the butcher in a container of water in the refrigerator overnight. And then I came several times to the lab here. We did a sodium, quantitative sodium test to show that its sodium content was less than the normal, less than the natural meat. But you have to know that. You have to have that orientation. You have to know that God speaks to us both in nature and in halacha. Here's one of my favorite battles, at least once a month.
I get a call, the baby is yellow, and the mohel will not do the circumcision because the bilirubin is too high. And the mohelim say, if it's above 12, we will not do mila. Where they got the number 12, I have the slightest idea. It's an arbitrary number. Because in America, a breastfed baby, and that's the only date I was able to find, on day 5 has a bilirubin of 13.6. That's the mode. It goes down, the liver, no time to explain to you, but the liver kicks in about day 5 and starts conjugating the hemoglobin so that the bilirubin falls. But bilirubin is a dirty word to a mohel. Therefore, he worries about it. Bilirubin is the best chemical we ever found in the world that binds radicals. Free radicals abound better by bilirubin than by vitamin C, than by selenium, etc., etc. When God made a man and said the baby should not have any enzyme to bind the bilirubin, let the bilirubin circulate in the blood, that's to prevent cancer for the baby, to catch all the free radicals. Why? Because the baby suddenly becomes an oxygen-breathing animal, and therefore the free radicals begin to form. But when you look at bilirubin as a healthy thing, and suddenly I don't worry about it. 12 is bad. 13 is better. 14 is better. Ask the Pediatric Association. They say up to 19 is okay. Sure, there are problems with bilirubin where the liver is damaged and so on. But that's, yet you can't argue with a mohel today. So thank God we have a few mohelim who graduated from Yeshiva College. They're always available. Yeah, just because my name is evolved into another name here too. There, this is the second case I had. The first case was Professor Berger, Zichron Levracha, who used to be the dean here at Furkauf. Furkauf or Wurzweiler, remember already? Who was killed on the way home to Albany, and they wanted to do an autopsy on him. And I convinced our local coroner to do a CAT scan and to prove that he died from the seatbelt cutting through the aorta and didn't have to do the autopsies. Here was another case, a fellow died on a train. You always assume foul play. By law, they have to do an autopsy. Spoke to the fellow. I said, no, you need information. CAT scan. Got our local hospital to agree to do the CAT scan, right, and save the autopsy. But there are many Rabbonim who don't know it's a CAT scan. They think a CAT scan is something you look for pussycats. And here's one special for Pesach. Okay. How about this one? I'm just but running out of time. You know, at the Seder, the law is that when you drink the 4 cups of wine or eat the matzah, you must lean on your left hand. This is a rabbinic law. It's not God's law. The rabbis made it up. Why would they make up such a strange law? If you don't lean on your left side, and many people do it purposely, you have to drink another 4 cups. So, a gastroenterologist at Mayo Clinic, who was an art collector, went around in Italy, and he noticed a strange thing. Every portrayal of people eating showed them leaning on the left side. Take a look at that. Okay. What's he saying? That people learned that you're more comfortable eating on the left side. In halacha, it says an ovel, someone who just lost a close relative and he's in mourning, the first day cannot lean on his left side when he eats. Because that's the way you eat when you're happy with yourself, when you're comfortable, you're not being rushed. At time of tragedy, don't want to behave that way. Suddenly, when our sages said, eat on the left side, I want you to eat like free men.
That's the whole message of the Seder, that now you're free people. You were redeemed from slavery. So eat like free people eat. Free people eat, leaning on the left side with a most likely a Nubian slave waving a palm branch, etc. Okay, now a quick one. We're running out of time. This is a critical one. The Torah says that a rabbit chews its cud. It says, Vashofen, Yimale Gedohu. What happened now? It's a Neves, right? The Shofen, there's a rabbit. And there is another rodent, Kimalas Gerehi, Upasalo, trees. It doesn't have cloven hoof. But it should, even though it chews its cud, it's not kosher. But a rabbit doesn't chew its cud. And God doesn't make mistakes. That's in the Torah already. That's not rabbinic law. So what do you mean that the rabbit chews its cud? So this came from my PhD in microbiology. As we picked up at Columbia. Rabbits, the cellulitic microflora is passed out in the feces. They can't digest cellulose, which is the main food that they eat. Get no value from the cellulose. Grass is no value to them. Only because microorganisms will break down the cellulose into hemicellulose and sugars, and then they can make use of it. To recover some of the lost protein, rabbits, what happened? Where are we up to? I'm sorry. No. To recover some lost protein, rabbits frequently practice coprophagy, eating of the feces. You have a rabbit, they'll defecate in one corner, and then you find in the morning that things disappeared. They eat it again. Why? During the night, the bacteria break down the cellulose, so the animal is malagevo. It eats what it ate before. That's what the Talmud says. Okay, this last week you heard about the splitting of the Red Sea. Okay, I was in Okinawa when the Stars and Stripes paper reported, if you want to go and see the splitting of the sea in South Korea, four times a year, 20 feet of water disappear, thousands of people rush in and pick up the clams and et cetera, 20 feet of water, stays away for several hours, four times a year. So what's the big deal of splitting of the Red Sea? Big miracle. I'll tell you this, when they're chasing you and it splits just at that moment, that's the miracle. The laws of nature allow for it. That's the point. We don't like miracles. Because miracle means what? God changed the law of nature at that moment. God doesn't change his mind. Whenever you can explain a miracle by natural law, it's to our advantage. It's no less of a miracle, because the miracle was it happened when I wanted it to happen, when it saved my life anyway. There's much more, but I think we have to watch the schedule. You kids have class. Please God, Carl will finish the rest.
I know a lot of people have to leave for class, but if anybody has questions that they'd like to ask Rav Kevler, he's available.
If the Tzitz Eliezer wasn't masking to normative science, then how do we view the rest of his Piskei Halacha?
I suspect. Never listen to him.
So who do you...
Anything that's on an interface requires scientific knowledge is absolutely off the board.
Well, isn't our Moses...
He makes me my cousin. And I met with him over and over again, tried to convince me. He never changed his mind.
But aren't most of his Piskei Halacha on medical halacha?
I'm sorry?
Aren't most of... So...
Well, most of them don't involve any new science that... impacts upon it. You know, but if it does, it's totally unreliable. And interesting, like the doctors, they knew it. Doctors asked Steinberg, he said, why'd you sit there? He said, Benny McCullough, and said, they knew he was off. No one passing like that.
I'd like to know what the
So I thought that, according to the Rambam, all of America.
Hurry.
What if you say something about that? It's not good that he knows my grades. This is not going to